because for the first time in 3 decades, the agency's spectrum auction authority has expired. We need it back. This is the tool that has made us the worldwide leader in wireless. We need this tool back because we do not intend to cede that title to anyone else.
The loss of spectrum auction authority, broadband deployment, and robocalls were big subjects at today's House FCC oversight hearing. We'll have more statements plus other FCC news coming up right now.
REC, FCC Today, Peachy Bradley.
This is FCC Today, the podcast for Wednesday, June 21, 2023. We'll have more from today's House hearing, but first, there's other news from across the FCC. At 9 a.m. Eastern Time this morning, the FCC had restored services to the Universal Licensing System. The ULS is used for filings in the Wireless Telecommunications Bureau, including land mobile radio, microwave services, broadcast auxiliary, amateur radio, the general mobile radio service, antenna structure registrations, and historic preservation. Due to the length of the outage and the expected rush to use the system now that systems are available, for items with a deadline or expiration between June 9 and June 29, the deadline or expiration is now June 30. Due to the anticipated volume of activity over the next few days, the FCC has asked that ULS users avoid doing any discretionary filings this week. For filers with larger requests, they are being asked to coordinate their filings with the Wireless Telecommunications Bureau. Any filings affected by the extended deadlines will be accepted as timely and therefore will not be required to have a waiver request nor pay any waiver fees. Just a reminder, if you're listening to this on the Michelle Bradley YouTube channel, please remember to like this video, subscribe to the channel, and hit the notification dinger to be reminded of future content. Thanks again for your support. Starting next week, we will be changing our schedule for FCC Today, the podcast. In order to better focus our resources among all REC activities and to hopefully get episodes out earlier in the day, we will be reducing the podcast episodes to 2 per week, with episodes airing on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Of course, if there's a major news item, we can break from that schedule to talk about it. Putting together a 10-minute podcast like this with the resource of only one person actually does take several hours. And in the immortal words of John Wolford, president of Jam Creative Productions, the company that makes our jingles, it takes time to make things. Thank you for your understanding. 3 TV translator licensees have received notices of apparent liability for failing to file a renewal application before the filing deadline. These include Chief Joseph Community Services, licensee of TV translators K25NYD, K23MUD, and K24LMD, all in Bridgeport, Washington. Prospect Lions Club, licensee of K07GI, D in Prospect, Oregon, and the town of Cooley City, Washington, licensee of K10RAD, K12RDD, and K11WYD. The forfeiture for each station is $1,500. Licensees have 30 days to respond to their respective NALs. A consent decree has been reached with Hokeman Hawaii 5 Incorporated, licensee of KRYL-FM, Haiku, Hawaii. In this proceeding, the Media Bureau staff had found that the stock transfer agreement submitted with an application for a transfer of control from the initial shareholders of Hokeman 5 and George Hokeman as an individual showed that Hokeman acquired control of the licensee without prior authorization from the FCC in November 2020, and that another shareholder had previously acquired control of the licensee in September 2017, also without prior FCC authorization. Under the consent decree, the licensee stipulates that they violated Section 310D of the Communications Act and Section 73.3540 of the rules. As part of the consent decree, the licensee will pay a civil penalty of $10,000. The House Communications and Technology Subcommittee held a hearing today on oversight of the FCC. Chair Rosenworcel and the other commissioners appeared as witnesses. In her opening statement, Rosenworcel stated that the pandemic has demonstrated that broadband is not a luxury, but a necessity. She then continued about the recent achievements at the agency.
First, we set up the Affordable Connectivity Program. It is the largest broadband affordability program in our nation's history, and it now helps nearly 19 million households get online and stay online. Second, we are fighting for consumers by promoting competition. We develop broadband labels that look just like the nutrition labels you see at the grocery store. Every carrier will need to use them so that every one of us can compare service plans. And we proposed all-in pricing to stop junk fees on cable and satellite bills. On top of that, we took action to help those who live in apartment buildings by ending sweetheart deals that landlords sometimes cut, making residents stuck with one broadband provider and shutting them off from competition. Third, we built the National Broadband Map. It is the most accurate broadband map in our nation's history. Fourth, we are helping connect the most vulnerable. We are using the Safe Connections Act to improve access to communications for survivors of domestic violence. We are using the Martha Wright Reed Act to finally address the sky-high rates for communications for families of the incarcerated. And this month, we took action to make the video conferencing platforms that became so popular during the pandemic accessible to those with disabilities. Fifth, we are doubling down on efforts to stop scam robocalls and robotexts. That means we've required new technologies in our networks. We are using new and creative enforcement tools. Sixth, we are helping connect people to emergency services. Next month is the one-year anniversary of the commission setting up 988. That's the easy-to-remember three-digit hotline to reach out to for suicide prevention and mental health assistance. Seventh, we're doing a lot to keep our network safe. We have published the first-ever list of communication services that pose an unacceptable risk to national security. We're working with carriers to remove insecure Chinese equipment from their networks. And we are laser-like focused on consumer security with the first-ever Privacy and Data Protection Task Force at the Commission. Eighth, we are working to make our networks more resilient. We have developed the Mandatory Disaster Response Initiative for the first time, requiring roaming and mutual aid from carriers. Ninth, we have launched the Space Bureau. The space economy is growing fast, and also growing are the number of satellite applications before the commission. We are reorganizing to support this growth and ensure that in the new space age, the United States leads. Tenth, but not last, we are building the wireless future. We have held two mid-band spectrum auctions, identified more than 1,000 megahertz of spectrum for new use in the 12 and 13 gigahertz band, and are organizing for our 6G future with networks that feature dynamic access technologies, machine learning, and artificial intelligence.
Many of these issues were discussed in examination by members of the subcommittee, including the current lapse in commission authority under Section 309J of the Communications Act to hold spectrum auctions, and why the commission needs this authority in order to help further close the digital divide, especially in rural areas. Republicans on the subcommittee took the FCC to task on the recently failed merger between Tegna and Standard General. Kathy McMorris Rogers of Washington.
Senator Cruz and I sent you a letter, Madam Chair, in April requesting information related to the Standard General application to acquire Tegna. In your response, you declined to answer most of our questions. Since the transition is no longer before the FCC to be litigated, I hope you can answer our questions today. This merger would have created the nation's largest minority-owned and woman-led broadcast company in the United States history. There were reports that you knew by delegating this to be to an administrative law judge that it was destined to fall apart. As the chair of the FCC, the commission has control over the transfer of broadcast licenses. So why was the hearing designation order issued by the Media Bureau and under delegated authority rather than through a full commission vote?
To be clear, this is still a restricted proceeding, so there are some limitations, but I will try to answer your questions. The commission has lots of precedent for doing this at the Bureau level. Be happy to share those cases with you. In addition, the parties to this transaction took the agency to court, not once, but twice, and alleged that we were not following the law. But the D.C. Circuit, in both cases, found that the FCC's efforts to send this to an administrative law judge fully complied with the Communications Act.
I'd like to ask the other commissioners if you believe this act acquisition should have received a full commission vote, beginning with Commissioner Carr.
I think we deserve to give these parties an up or down vote on the merits after a year plus long review. It's a problem here, but also more broadly, I think it's a troubling signal to anybody looking to invest in local journalism, which we need as a country, that at any point in time, a trap door could open up and they can't get to a decision on the merits.
From my perspective, the transaction in full never came before me as a commissioner. Didn't have the opportunity to view the full record. But as the chairwoman said, twice this came before on the question of process and the law, and our how we handled the transaction was upheld by the D.C. Circuit.
I'm not going to disagree with the characterization of the process as following the law as currently written. On the other hand, I don't know that this addresses the concerns that you've raised with the adequacy of that process and with the confidence that we can have that this process will result in full commission review going forward. So as I stated in my opening remarks, I think it would be useful for the FCC to adopt or for Congress to propose to the FCC a means of ensuring that every such transaction is able to receive timely review at the commission level.
Congress is also considering granting the FCC new powers to not just invoke forfeitures, but the ability to collect on them. Democrat Doris Matsui of California asks Chair Rosenworcel about the effectiveness of such legislation.
Today, Chairman Lujan and I introduced the FCC Legal Enforcement Act to give the FCC new authority to go after scammers. Consumers across the country are inundated with these calls, and I believe it's imperative we help enforcers keep up with these fly-by-night operations. Chair Rosenworcel, can you talk about the limitations of the existing process and how this bill will help the FCC crack down on scammers?
Thank you for your efforts. We have been working to try to get rid of these junk calls and texts on overtime. In fact, like I mentioned, we have 44 state attorneys general now working with us on this. We've issued more than $700 million in fines, but the FCC is not institutionally allowed to go collect those fines in court. I'd like to have the power to do so. I recognize that some of these folks are fly-by-night companies, but I want to be able to hold them accountable in a court of law, so I appreciate your legislative efforts.
On a totally different subject, Tim Walberg, Republican from Michigan, asks Commissioner Carr about his arguments supporting the ban of social media site TikTok in the United States.
Commissioner Carr, this committee has been working diligently to address the pervasive threat of TikTok, especially after discovering that their CEO lied throughout his testimony here in March. I've heard some people make First Amendment arguments for why we shouldn't ban TikTok in the United States. Can you give us your perspective on the issue?
I've heard that argument as well, and I don't think that it's particularly strong. If you look at the Supreme Court precedent, they've drawn a very clear distinction between regulatory action based on the content of speech as opposed to the conduct of an actor. There's a famous Supreme Court case, Arcara Books, it had to do with a bookstore that was engaged in criminal conduct out of the bookstore. The government shut down the bookstore because of that. The proprietor said, you can't shut down my bookstore. That's First Amendment protected activity. And the court was clear that the action had nothing to do with speech or content. It was based on conduct. So too here with TikTok. The action would not be based on the content of TikTok's speech or, for that matter, anybody's speech. It would be based on the conduct that represents a clear national security threat. And for that reason, I think the First Amendment argument against taking action on TikTok is not particularly strong.
The entire hearing lasted over 3 hours. These were just some small excerpts from the hearing. There's a lot more to watch. There will be a link to today's hearing in our YouTube description. On Thursday, the Senate's Committee on Commerce, Science, and Transportation will hold hearings to consider the nomination of Ana Gomez to be the fifth FCC commissioner. Also during the hearing, the Senate committee will consider the renominations of Commissioners Brendan Carr and Jeffrey Starks for a second term. They will also consider the nomination of Farah Damlin to be the Inspector General of the agency. The hearing will start at 10 a.m. Eastern Time.
FCC Today.
FCC Today, the podcast, has been a production of REC Networks, always on at recnet.com. The podcast is available through Podbean, TuneIn, Apple Podcasts, iHeart, and on the Michelle Bradley YouTube channel. If you're watching on YouTube, please like this video, subscribe to the channel, and hit the notification dinger to be informed of new episodes. Keep up to the minute with events around the Media Bureau at FCC.today. If you need assistance with an FM broadcast facility, LPFM, full service, or translator, call 202-621-2355. I'm Michelle Bradley, KU3N SBE certified broadcast technologist. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you tomorrow.
REC.